a question was raised, and we went back a second to talk about the question of Kibbutz Av Em. The Rav sat Shiva three times in 1 year, in 1965 or six. 1966. He lost his mother, his brother, and his wife all in 1 year. And I think on the occasion of his wife's Shiva, the third of these three Shivas in a row, Rav Hutner, Zichron Lebracha, and Rav Pinchas P.M. Teitz, Zichron Lebracha, of Elizabeth, New Jersey, went to be Menachem Avel. I heard the story from Rabbi Yosef Blau, the Mashgiach of YU, who drove them up to Boston for their Shiva. Rabbi Blau is Rabbi Teitz's son-in-law. They're sitting there, and someone raises the question of why is Avelus, in other words, the Rav was an Avelus for his mother for the whole year. During that year, he was also an Avelus for his brother, for Shloshim, and also an Avelus for his wife, for a Shloshim. So the question of why is it that for parents, Avelus lasts a year? Because we say Kaddish just for 11 months, as you fellows know, because of this thing about Kibbutz Av Em, which is a reflection of Kibbutz Av Em, but Avelus itself lasts all year. This is a mistake. Some people think that when you stop saying Kaddish, you're done with Avelus and all of the things that that you were careful about during Avelus, like not going to weddings or music or whatever it is, so that it's not true. Except for saying Kaddish, all of the other restrictions apply up until the end of the year. So why is it that for parents the Avelus lasts longer than it does for all the other relatives? So each of them, Rav Hutner and Rav Teitz and the Rav, they each gave an answer. I'm not going to remember who said what.
Well, you happen to take what the Rav said.
Right, so I know what the Rav said, but I don't remember. But the way Rabbi Blau described it was that the answer that each gave said more about, you know, the person. No, you don't have to psychoanalyze it, but, you know, like it gave an insight to their... So one of them, either Rav Hutner or Rav Teitz, said that it's because your parents are, let me remember it, because of the unique relationship to parents. You lose Rachmanos, your wife. In theory, you can remarry. I mean, you shouldn't tell that to someone at Shiva, like as a way of being menachem them. Even children, you know, the greatest conceivable loss, the category of having a child is not inherently unique. Whether you do or do not have other children, the idea of having one child is not built into creation, even in China anymore. But parents, you only have one mother and one father. We are not here talking about the brave new world of new types of reproductive technologies. But in theory, into the plan of creation, there is only one mother and one father. So the mourning represents the uniqueness of that relationship which is now lost. I believe that's what Rav Teitz said. Rav Hutner, or perhaps it was Rav Teitz, offered a second explanation. That your parents are also your chain to the Masorah. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, Masrul Yoshua, Yoshua, fill in the blanks until your father, your mother, received it and handed it down to you. And whether your parents were literally your teachers, or whether they were, in a more larger sense, responsible for all of your education and your connection to the Jewish Masorah, when you mourn your parents, you're also mourning the severance of that tie to the Masorah, and that's why it mandates an extra long period of Avelus. Rabbi Soloveitchik said the following. In the nature of things, it doesn't always work out this way, Rachmanos, but in the nature of things, parents die at an older age. And you, when you mourn your parents, are usually yourself already an adult. Sometimes quite getting on in age. In the normal scheme of things.
It's the way of our flesh.
Right. When your parents die, they're 80, they're 90, whatever it is, in the normal scheme of things, of illness, having deteriorated over those last few years, whatever it is, the memory gets frozen. And you need a year to kind of peel off all the layers of that onion to get back to understand who this person was in their full. That is, you need the year-long cycle of going through the first Purim without your mother or father, the first Pesach without your mother or father, the first Shavuos, the first Rosh Hashanah, the first Yom Kippur, etc., to unpack all of those memories. I mean, we do this now also. I think of things from my childhood, and like when the movie plays in my mind, my mother, my father, who Baruch Hashem are alive and well, but I remember, like in the story, like when I think of that, you know, vacation we took when I was in high school, the character playing them in the movie that's playing in my mind looks much more like what they look like now than what they looked like then. And you go and you actually look at photos from 20 and 30 and 40 years ago, or sometimes even longer than that, photos of them from before you were born, and you're sometimes surprised how young they looked. I mean, sometimes you get that experience now when you look at your own photos from 20 and 30 and 40 years ago, so how young I looked. And the year-long process is about unraveling those memories, so you're not only mourning this person who was, you know, sick and in a hospital bed and whatever, but the whole scope of the life. Anyway, that's what
I went through the chair by Moshe Lichtenstein. I don't know if he was inspired by his grandfather or not in that regard, but he said that actually the reason why a year for a parent and a month for a child was because,
and a month for everyone else.
He was talking about a month for a child, and the context was that, you know, the parent, you might think, okay, you know this. You need a little pushing in that direction. You know, there might be inheritance. There might be like, you know, you might not be as traumatized by it as you would by a child. So the halacha is sort of trying to give you the direction of going. So he said, for a parent, it's making you go that extra step for the year. Whereas for a child, where you might just be unconsolable, it's actually limiting it, so you have more.
I heard.
So I don't know how that maybe relates exactly to siblings or to spouses, but that was his.
I heard one slight emendation, which is also true for the Rav, that it you're going to have. Your spouse or mother or son. You don't need the year, because what you need for your parent was 90 or 95, 96. Hopefully, well within years, you're going to get over it. So Allah will make you not get over it.
Similar.
Yeah.
Oh, that was you had the
reverse.
Yeah. Better hear it
from
the
rubber.
It's like a tribute to
the
rubber, which probably
fits in with the rubber. I just want to go back before we move on to the Mishnah. We looked at the Agadah halacha, halachic Agadah, or Agadah halacha, last week, the story of Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar. You remember, Tzidkiyahu is kind of under the thumb of Nebuchadnezzar before the destruction. He sees him, he catches him in the act of eating a raw bunny rabbit, which is, you know, not so nice, and Nebuchadnezzar was very embarrassed by this, and we talked last week about celebrities that have like non-disclosure clauses, you know, for the people that work in the household to preserve their privacy. So he made Tzidkiyahu take a shvua that he would not reveal the secret. And then afterwards, when Tzidkiyahu realized how bad things were getting and that this piece of information could be used in order to kind of kick back at Nebuchadnezzar, he did reveal the secret. So Nebuchadnezzar makes a claim on the Sanhedrin, how could you have been matir his neder? So it turns out that maybe they didn't do it properly because of this is brought piggybacked on the din of, if you make a neder that's of direct concern to someone, I make a neder that I'm not going to reveal your secret, I can only be matir that neder in a bet din if you are present, for one of two possible reasons, which the Gemara discussed. So here's a shaila. When you make a neder, or when you're matir neder, when you go to Bezdin, you're matir neder, you have to be mafarit the neder. You have to detail it. You can't just go to the Bezdin and say, I made a neder last week, lo mishaneh what it was, I'd like to be matir it. You have to explain what the neder was, what the content of the neder was. In order for Tzidkiyahu to be matir the neder, he would have had to reveal the secret. By revealing the secret, he would have been violating the neder. He's caught in catch 22. So how did it work? How was it possible?
They have to like reveal the names of the people involved. You say, I made a letter, you know, a certain neighbor that, you know, this one and the other. Now mentioning
you could have been Matthias. So among the answers. There are a number of poskim who say that even bidyeved, the neder isn't released unless you spell the details. But the question becomes, how much detail has to be spelled out in order to be matir neder? So, on this question, the Shita Mekubetzes says exactly what Shalom said. That it was done, he told him the story with all the details, but he did so anonymously. He said, I saw a certain person eating a raw rabbit. He was very embarrassed by this, and he made me take an edit that I wouldn't okay. reveal.
But even when he gave the explanation of why to justify it, they're probably giving away too. No? It might help the Jewish people if I point out to them.
But he said he has to bring Nebuchadnezzar there. So he brings the person, and he says there was somebody who did this.
No, so or he could have said, so either he could have said, I saw a certain person. He might have even said, I saw a certain important person. Without, what?
In other words, he has to bring Nebuchadnezzar there, he said.
No, no, but that's the problem. He didn't do that. That he didn't do.
But then it's still.
What? No, so that seems not to be a lechatchila requirement. It's a din, but b'dieved, if they're matir without the person present, apparently it works. Right. But no, if they're dead, so then if they're. Yeah.
Then you're giving away the whole secret.
So no, so precisely. So either he could have said a certain person, he might have said a certain important person, he might have said a certain important person from Bavel, right? Nebuchadnezzar wasn't the only, there were generals, there were administrators, there were all types of people. Or he could have said, I made a neder to Nebuchadnezzar without revealing what the embarrassing detail was. Right, he could have said, I'm in possession of a piece of embarrassing information about Nebuchadnezzar. I made him a promise. I made him an edda that I was shavua that I wouldn't reveal it. But now I need Adam. There is one shita that said that in a case like this, where forget the technical problem that should have been done in Nebuchadnezzar's presence, but in a case like this, where it's impossible to, you're in the catch 22. In order to be mefaret the neder, in order to spell out what the neder was, in order to do atarat nedarim, that itself constitutes a breaking of the neder, so then you're stuck. The Sanhedrin goes into closed session, right? Then you reveal, you know, like the intelligence committee, right? The intelligence committee. So there's certain things that, like, people are sworn to secrecy, but the intelligence committee can subpoena you. Right? So they go into closed session. There's no protocol. There's no recording. There's no phones allowed. David Kerwin isn't allowed into the room to check the computers.
I have to get my phone also.
Oh, what if there's no parents?
So there's all types of.
Do we know what?
Yes, he says, I regret. Had I known that I could save the Jewish people when I made him this promise, it was, you know, or I, we don't know. The Agadah does not spell out what Petach he used, right? The Agadah does not spell out what Petach he used exactly, but maybe he said, like, I made the neder under duress, like he really forced, you know, like when the king like kind of forces you into the neder, so I made it under duress, I made it under false pretense.
Right, so the rest was the Petach. Wouldn't it be like if I go to the base station and I'm sitting in front of three rabbis or the base station, whatever? Wouldn't it be like whatever you tell your lawyer, like your lawyer can't use against you?
Right. So this idea that, in other words, in this case, it does not constitute a violation of the neder because it's under privilege to the Sanhedrin. Because the mechanics of you can't be matir the neder unless you reveal the details, and since the hatara is matir b'dieved, right? Then having told them didn't constitute a violation of the shivua. Okay, the Mishnah on Samech Hei Omud Aleph. Rabbi Meir Omer Yesh Dvarim Shehein Kinolad Ve'enan Kinolad. There are certain things that are both like Nolad, but not exactly so. Now you remember we saw last week that essentially Nolad does not count as a legitimate petach for Hatarat Nadarim.
Didn't constitute Nolad?
No, there was a debate about what constitutes Nolad. But a case of Nolad itself, whether death constitutes Nolad or not, was the subject of how we got into the story about Moshe Rabbeinu. But the idea of Nolad itself is, it exists. The cases the Mishnah gives about the Beit Knesset or the house, the sofer, Nolad. So Lamaisa, we say that Nolad is not a petach in and of itself. There has to be some other petach to allow them to be mat to the neder.
If there's some other petach, then what's the whole point of the category?
No, but that's the machlokas. But lahalacha, we say that Nolad doesn't count. But Rabbi Meir says, but there's a different category, things that are what I'll call quasi-Nolad. They're like Nolad, but they're not like Nolad. They're like Nolad in the sense that some new fact has arisen, but they're not like Nolad exactly. And therefore, maybe we can be matir them according to Rabbi Meir, or better yet, according to Rabbi Meir, the nedarim are betelim. That sometimes when a circumstance changes, the neder is canceled. There is such a thing as a neder without you don't need hatarat nedarim for, because there's a built-in tenai. There's a built-in condition. If I make a neder that I'm not going to eat in your house for 30 days, on the 31st day, I don't need hatarat nedarim. The neder has expired. That's obvious. So as you might imagine from more than a little experience learning Gemara, we're now going to examine the cases that are not obvious. So, v'meir omer yesh tvarim shehen kenolad ve'enan kenolad ve'en chachamim modin lo. So the chachamim who have a more restrictive sense of what can be a petach, so they don't agree with him. Ketzad, what is a case that is like but not like nolad? Omar, Konam she'ani nose et plonit she'avia ra. I make a neder that I won't marry this girl because her father is a Russia. Her father's a bad guy. Amrulo met. He's dead. He died. Oh, shasat shuva. Ah, he used to be a Russia, but what do we know about Rishoyim? What? Even Rishayim can do tshuva. Adarabba. Rishayim can especially do tshuva. And so he's not. So the reason that you get, as opposed to the examples in the previous Mishnah, I make a neder, I'm not going to get hanof from this guy. And then this guy becomes like the one guy in town that I need to make use of his services. I make a neder, I won't go into this house. And then this house becomes the place I have to go through three times a day to catch a minion. But we don't know why he didn't want to go into that house. And we don't know why he didn't want to get benefit from that man. Here, there's an answer that's stipulated. There's a reason, rather, that's stipulated. Right? I don't want to marry this girl because she's her father. I don't know who wants this guy as a father-in-law? But, oh, Pitom. I mean, fill in the father-in-law jokes. Pitom. It turns out that he's not in the picture anymore, or that he's no longer a bad guy. Konam lebayit ze shani nechnas shakelev ra betocho. Oh, shanachash betocho. I make an edda, I'm not going to go into this house because there's a bad dog, a wicked dog. Or there's a snake. Amrulo, meta kelev. The kelev went the way of all flesh. Oh, shaneharaga nachash. The kelev didn't do tshuva. So harei hein kenolad ve'einan kenolad ve'ein chachamim modin lo.
That's strange.
Why?
Because I would put that in the more obvious category.
It would seem a little more easy to use this as a petach than the previous case, because the situation has changed. But the Chachamim say here, that in and of itself does not count, because it depends on how do you view the statement. Say, I'm not going to marry this girl. She's got a bad father. So what's the...
It's not in
the Lashon of a T'nai. So is the T'nai implicit? I mean, well, what does it sound like?
No, you know, I'm afraid that he's had influence on his daughter anyway, whether the person's alive or not.
Okay, so what about the bad dog who's dead?
Well, there's another issue. It doesn't say why Chachamim are not Modim. Maybe it says in the Gemara.
But what do you think?
If the Chachamim are saying it because of the pure logic, that's one thing. But if they're saying it because they don't want people to be quick and easy with the Nadarim, then that would be a
reason. Yeah, and that fits in with what we saw previously. Right. But when you say a statement like this, okay, the father being alive or dead, let's understand the father case, the Pshuto Kamashmo. I don't want this guy as my father-in-law. He's going to cause me a lot of headaches. Right? Let's not talk about he was a bad influence on his daughter. She seems very nice. Look, you don't want to marry her, so just make a kona on that. I don't want to marry her. Right? In other words, then it's because she's suspected as being a Rasha. But there's a Havamina that he would marry her. She's nice, she's pretty, Alamailas, all the good things. But it's a case, right? Look, it could also be, like what is such a bizarre case? So, you think, like, it's such a bizarre, why did somebody, so just don't marry her. Just don't marry. So, of course, we're talking about a time where, you know, although parents could not literally force you to marry who you wanted, you have to enter Kiddushin with a... But in reality, we know that parents, at least we'd like to think, have some influence on their kids. And in the world of Shiduchim, don't you see, what's the show everybody talks about? Shtissel. You watch this?
No.
There's this Haredi soap opera. You never seen this? I saw a few episodes. It's really good. There's a Haredi soap. It's much better than Strugim. It's much better than Strugim. A Haredi soap opera set in Meisharim, called Shtissel. You can get it. You can watch it online. So it's all about the Shiduchim, right? And being forced into Shiduch, and your parents decide, and you know. So you don't want to marry this girl, but your parents are going to force you. I mean, they're going to put pressure on you, right? If you don't literally put the ring on her finger and say Hariat Mikudeshetli, so you're not married. But there's all types of other ways to pressure and force. So you don't want to marry this girl, and your parents are pushing and pressuring you. You say Kona Mani marry this girl, right? It's like you can put a monkey wrench in the works. There are reasons that somebody might take a neder like this.
This is a neder that's covered by their parents. So they have another pet.
Yeah, but then you have to go. In other words, you have to go to the Beis Din and seek Hataras Nedarim. You go to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din says you want out of the neder. You say no, I don't want out of the neder. Right? You've now kind of grab the reins of the situation in a way that kind of shuts down this shidduch against your will. I'm just speculating what a case could be. But you're right, Ben. It's a case. It's a case in the Gemara. So, but somebody makes a statement like this. I make a neder, I won't marry this girl whose father's a Rasha. So what's the ikar, the Resha or the Sefer? From the purposes of a neder, do we say he's made a neder, he's not marrying this girl? He's not marrying her because she snores. He's not marrying her because her father's a Rasha. He's not marrying her because he's in love with someone else. He's not. What's the ikker? Is the ikker the neder that he doesn't want to marry this girl? Or is the ikker that he stipulated that he doesn't want to be connected to this bad father? So if the stipulation is the bad father, and the bad father is no longer bad, and the bad father is no longer the father because he's dead, that contravenes what I said earlier about the parents always being the parents. But you understand what I mean? Right? You're not going to have to go to him for...
You know, I think you don't know that.
Mitamechaperet, right? No, I mean, but you're not going to have to go to him for Pesach because he's dead. So you don't mind having him as a father-in-law if he's in Haram Menuchos. But you don't want to have him as a father-in-law if he's at your Pesach Seder. So,
the mother-in-law.
Ah, so the Dibra Mishnah Beloshen Saginor, not to speak bad of mothers-in-law. So is the Iker the Etzem Tanai, the Etzem Neder, which is I don't want to marry this girl, or is the Iker the Tanai, which qualifies the Neder? That might be the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, Konam Shani Nechnas Labayet Ze Shehakelev Chule Mate Nolad Hu. Right? Why is this not a case of? Why is this not a case of Nolad? How is this different than?
Which we wouldn't be allowed to. You're saying if it was Nolad, then we.
If it was just regular Nolad, so then we'd be back in the previous Mishnah.
Although, I mean, it's kind of weird to say that because you would assume, like, the. We're saying in general that categorically Nolad does not apply, or the way the examples they gave before were.
When we say that it's Nolad ve'ena Nolad, it's a new category. So is it enough, not like Nolad, to be examined in its own rights? So made ukfa. Where'd I go?
Amar
Huna. Ah, so Amar Huna, nase kitole nidro bedavar. So Rav Huna says, no, this is different because it's not like the previous Mishnah, the previous Sugya, because here he was tole, he stipulated a condition on something. And having stipulated the neder on a condition, so if the condition has changed, maybe the neder is batel.
Can I just clarify? If he says something... as long as her father is a bad guy, I'm not going to marry her.
Yeah.
The second that her father is not a bad guy, everyone agrees that.
So then that would be no. That might be you don't even need a hataras nadar. Right. In other words,
it'd be like the 30 days, 31 days.
Right. That in other words, there he stipulates it's condition. It's clearly a conditional ned there. Right, and if the condition changes, then the neder changes. Right, you make a neder that's time bound for 30 days. On the 31st day, it's just over. Right, so you say I won't marry her as long as her father's alive. Once the father's dead, the neder is over on its own. Here, the neder is he won't marry her, and then he supplies not a tnai, a condition, which is self-destructive. Once the condition is met, then the neder goes away. He gives us some kind of insight into his reasons, but it's not a condition explicitly.
Rabbi Yochanan Amar kvar met ukvar asat shuva ka'amrele.
So maybe Rabbi Yochanan said, you'll notice if you check your notes, if you rewind the recording, when I translated the Mishnah, how did I translate? How are we meant to read the Mishnah? Is it Shavi Hara Amrulo Mate? On Sunday he made a neder, because the father is wicked. On Tuesday the father died, so on Wednesday they can or cannot get married. Or is it on Tuesday he made a neder, he won't marry her because her father's a Rasha, but unbeknownst to him, the father had died the previous Sunday.
Kind of like the thing with Moshe and the town of Rome. They also said that, like, it was already turned out that the answer was already...
No. In other words, when Moshe makes the neder about Datan Vabiram...
He didn't know. The Gemara makes the deal.
No. In other words, when...
If he had known, he wouldn't have made the...
So this is an important rule in Dharma, but if it happens, the neder.
So in other words, if they were already dead when he made the neder. Then what kind of neder is this? What kind of neder is it?
It doesn't count in the first place.
It's a neder, fill in the blank, ta'ut.
So you're saying there's also a neder ta'ut?
Yeah.
Same thing.
So, and it's if, according to Rabbi Yochanan...
A neder ta'ut still needs hatara?
No. Neder ta'ut. If I make a neder, if I make a neder that... I don't like you, right? I don't like you. So I say, your house, you know, you're my next door neighbor. I'm never gonna step foot in, that's a bad example. You make an edit, which is based on an error, on a factual error, right? Right?
More a matter of how do you translate it? Because if you're saying Shavia Lav because her father is bad, or you're saying whose father is bad? Because if you're saying I'm not marrying this girl whose father is bad, well, her father is a man, in which case it's not that girl.
Right.
So it's not a nether to begin with, so it wouldn't be a question.
Right, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Rabbi Yochanan says that he did Shuvah, he was either dead or had already done Shuvah before he made the nether. Right? Like Rashi wants to say about Datan Vaviram. That they had already been dead when he made the neder, so the neder wasn't a neder bechlal. He doesn't need a taras neder. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar, kvar meit ukvar aset shuva, kamre le. So motiv, Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba disagrees with this.
Was that Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing with Rahuna?
If they would have look at Rashi here.
It's not nolad because it's
Rav Huna nase ketoled nedro b'davar b'rishot aviha. He makes it conditional on the wickedness of the father. Demashma kol zman shaviha b'chayim devadai im amar she'eni nose et plonit stam. Vadai de kedem arta hashta, de omar shaviha ra, the fisha hu rasha, eno no se et bito, vahochi potchen lo lomar ilu haiti yodea shemet. Would you have made the neder? Rabbi Yochanan omer, that he's already dead, lo havin nolad klal, de bishash nadar kfar met.
So they're both explaining why it's not
new. Right, it's not a new condition. It's an erroneous condition.
So they both disagree with man.
They both disagree.
One says it's nolad. One says it's right. Not nolad.
One says it's a toad.
Right.
The kfar made b'shashin adar v'hava le b'toad v'hada amrina b'matnitin shehen k'nolad didamu l'nolad purta. So Rab Abba attacks this idea, and he quotes the Mishnah on Daf Samech Vav Amud Beis, the Mishnah that we already saw. When did we see this Mishnah? No, not Samech Vav Amud Beis, Samech Vav Aleph. The next Mishnah over here, Samech Vav Amud Aleph. Potchin, I wrote on base here by Tov. Konam she'eni nosei leplonit ki'ura. I won't marry this ugly girl. Vaharehi na'a. But really, she's, don't ask, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Who's to say who's ugly? Every hand has a glove. Everybody's beautiful to someone. The Mishnah speculates on the idea that there are these binary categories. Pretty girls and ugly girls. And you're either in the first or the second. Don't get mixed up with reality. This is a construct. You say, I'm not going to marry this ugly girl. But it turns out that she's beautiful. What do you mean? Either she is or she isn't. You know that she is or she isn't. How could it be? You might not have seen her. And the Skype wasn't working to like, you know. Right? But you heard that she's ugly.
Plastic surgery a couple years back.
Yeah, you know, first of all, there's the ugly duckling, right? You ever see those movies about Henry VIII? You know, Henry VIII like had to make these decisions quite frequently because he had, you know, quite a few wives. So they would arrange a shidduch with some princess from Spain or something, because these were all, you know, alignments to solidify the kingdom. A countess from France, somebody from Spain, whatever it was. So he'd never met these women sometimes before he met them. I mean, sometimes they'd been his mistresses before. So, but he knew there were rumors that she's very ugly, she's very pretty, she's this or that. So it's true that it was a marriage of political convenience. But at the same time, he doesn't want to marry somebody ugly. So they would bring these portraits, you know, like these oil paintings to like show him. See, she's very pretty. But who can trust that? It's not like you can Photoshop those things, you know. So Yecholiot, he'd never seen him before. So he makes a neder that he won't marry the ugly girl. Vahari hi na'a, she's pretty. Shchora, vahari hi levana. I won't marry this dark-skinned girl, and it turns out she's not dark-skinned at all. She's fair-skinned. Ktsara, vahari hi aruka. I won't marry her because she's too short, and it turns out that she's quite tall. Mutar ba lo mipnei she'keora v'nasit na'a, shchora v'nasit levana, ktsara v'nasit aruka, ela shehaneder ta'ut. In other words, this Mishnah is the home address for the idea of a neder ta'ut. Right? You make a neder, I'm not going to marry her because she's missing all her teeth. But she's got all her teeth. I'm not going to marry her because she's blind. She can see perfectly well. Right? So we're not talking about plastic surgery. We're talking about just your facts were wrong. Your facts were wrong. So the neder doesn't count because it was made about someone who doesn't exist. She's not ugly. She's not blind. She's not short. She's not whatever it is. So the neder doesn't count. So that Mishnah, the Mishnah after, Samach Vav Amud Aleph, is the home address for the idea that there's such a thing as a neder ta'ut. So wait a second. What does Rabbi Yochanan say our Mishnah is about? Our Mishnah is about a neder ta'ut. I make a neder that I don't want to marry her. Her father's a bad guy. But her father's dead. So what is it?
It's a question of Chachamim.
What?
It's a question of Chachamim.
No, but it's also a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, our Mishnah is about a neder ta'ut. But if the next Mishnah is about a neder ta'ut, what do you need our Mishnah for? Or vice versa?
It's whether you knew or not.
In both cases, you didn't know. I make a neder because I don't want the father-in-law. But it turns out that he's dead. I don't want to marry her because she's ugly. Turns out she's ugly. Right? In both cases, it's based on false knowledge. Bishlama l'Rav Huna. So okay, it's all right for Rav Huna, because what is Rav Huna? Who the Amar Naser Kitole Nidro B'Davar? Rav Huna says our Mishnah is a din in a Tanai. Right? You say I don't want to marry her because her father is wicked, and then it turns out that her father is not wicked because he's dead or because he's done tshuva. So then we say that the Tanai...
It hasn't happened yet,
right? When you make the neder, it's true, he's a Russia. But then the next day, he does tshuva or he drops dead. So the Tanai... The tole, the thing he said is the reason for the neder has gone away. So the neder should go away, says Rav Huna. The next Mishnah on the next daf is a different din about neder ta'ut. But our Mishnah about the snake, about the dog, about the father-in-law, it's not about neder ta'ut. It's about tole nedro bedavar. But Rabbi Yochanan says that our Mishnah, so bishlama l'Rav Huna, to Omar nase ke tole nedro bedavar, tana tole nedro bedavar, v'tana neder ta'ut. The first tana is the first Mishnah. Our Mishnah is about tole nedro bedavar, and the next Mishnah is about neder ta'ut. El Rabbi Yochanan, the Omar kvar mate, kvar asa tshuva, lama li lematne tre zimne neder ta'ut. What do you need two separate Mishnayos about neder ta'ut? It's a redundancy. Kasha. And on a chinami. It's a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, says the Gemara. It's a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. There are a variety of attempts to answer this kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. One is this idea.
But even before you get to answers, shouldn't it be like if, I mean, it's a little not, you know, we had the Gemara, like they also could have come up with any answers, like if they didn't know there was any, I'm sure you come up with a million explanations, but it seems weird that we have, like, we can't just say, okay, well, okay, we're just going to, like...
But they didn't think about it.
Oh, they didn't think about it? Okay, they had, you know, plenty of time to come up with some interesting...
Okay, so it's true, like, you know, but that's, you know, we're Jewish, aren't we?
Right, but I'm saying, but if the Gemara's willing to end there, so it seems like, you know, it doesn't happen usually like that. Usually we just say, you know...
I read something really interesting. Jung, you know, Carl Jung, the Swiss... psychiatrist, the disciple of Freud, has a book called, I forget what it's called, Memory Something and Something Else. It's a kind of like autobiography / Ani Ma'amin. That was written near the end of his life. So I just saw this yesterday. He says he was at work on a book. And he was struggling, you know, to get it right and to come up with a theory and develop an idea. And he was away on vacation, and he had a dream that his forefathers, his grandfather, I don't know who it was, let's say his father comes to him in a dream and asks him a question, saying, you know, what's the answer? This thing that you're working on, what's the answer? And he didn't yet have the answer. So he wakes up in a cold sweat, he packs his bags, and he leaves the chalet or wherever he's on vacation, and he runs back home to his study, cutting the vacation short, to work on the thing. And he says, you know, it's a mistake to think the common notion that the dead have all the answers. You know, like when you die, you go to Gan Eden, and you're dead, but... You find out who was on the grassy knoll. You find that fill in what are the 10 other examples from Sarah Val of the great mysteries, you know, of creation. You know, you find out the answers to all the questions. You know, where's Amelia Earhart, and you know, Miodea, right? Where's Jimmy Hoffa, right? You know, and all the answers, all the things you didn't know, you have the answers to. That's, to a certain degree, the Rambam's conception of Olam Haba, of Gan Eden, rather, that you're plugged in as a disembodied, you know, entity. Your soul is plugged into the mainframe of the active intellect, and you know you have access to all the true information, meaning the Torah, meaning the mysteries of creation. And I guess if you're interested in Jimmy Hoffa, you can find that out too. You know, it's like the unexpurgated Wikipedia, the Wikipedia that has the answer to everything, not just the things that people that had time on their hands uploaded. But Jung said maybe that idea is completely wrong. Maybe the dead are dead, and whatever they knew, Bolam Azeh, they know Bolam Abba. I mean, these are my terms, not his. And they still want to know the answer to those things that they didn't have the answers to. And they turn to us. meaning he's not speaking, he didn't believe in ghosts like that, but he's interpreting the dream. That the grandfather, the father, coming to him in the dream, saying, what's the answer to Carl, noob? What's the answer to this question you're working on? Right? This theory that you're working on, what's the answer? Because when we come up with the answer, when we come up with the chiddush, so we're bringing nachas ruach to them. Again, I'm Judaizing all of these. I mean, he was a Jew, of course, but I'm halachaizing all these concepts. We bring nachas ruach to them because they've been searching for these answers all along. So it's true, the Gemara ends kasha, but that doesn't mean that the Rishonim can't try to bring them some nachas ruach by coming up with a theory. It's true that in halachic matters, we say that like an achron can't counter a tana. Right, that an achron can't counter a rishon, that an amora can't counter a tana, except in the cases where it's okay. But in principle, you can't. It's that game of Gemara poker that I've always spoken about. A tana beats an amora, right? An amora beats a gaon beats a rishon beats an achron beats anybody that we know and is alive today. So it doesn't mean we can't try. So then a variety of answers that are given. We have this idea of a machloket va'achar kach stam mishnah. Like these kinds of like prioritizing levels in the mishnah. That when a second mishnah, a subsequent mishnah, stam mishnah, meaning an unattributed mishnah, repeats the shita of a previous mishnah, which contains a machlokes, it teaches us that the halakha is like that opinion which is repeated.
That's interesting, because Stam Mishnah is very rare, right? In this case...
Yeah, generally we say Stam Mishnah is like Rebbe Meir, yeah.
And in the Mishnah we had here, so you don't hold Rebbe Meir. Chachamim don't accept Rebbe Meir.
I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't considered that. Wait, let me think that through. Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah says,
the fear of Yochanan. So he's saying the same thing that he's saying in his next Mishnah.
Okay, so let's leave that aside for a second. So the Mishnah on Samech Vav quotes only the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Stam Mishnah. Okay, there's a problem because we generally say Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir. Okay, but
so without Rabbi Yochanan, it works very well.
No, but we're trying to attempt an answer for Rabbi Yochanan. So the Stam Mishnah on Samech Vav quotes only Rabbi Meir. And since it does so Stam, anonymously, so then we should say that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. In which case, why is there a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan? Because if that's the case, there is no unnecessary repetition. Because the problem with Rabbi Yochanan is that we have an unnecessary repetition. Rabbi Yochanan says our Mishnah is about a neder ta'ut and the Mishnah on Samech Vav is a neder ta'ut. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, there is no unnecessary repetition. It's the necessary repetition of the klal of machloket v'achar kach stam comes to teach you that the which way to paskin in the previous machloket, which is like Rebbe Meir. So it's true that the deck is stacked because it's Rebbe Meir telling us that Rebbe Meir was right, if that's the case. But Becholzot, in other words, the halakha is not determined by Rebbe Meir, right? But he's there to record what the position is.
The actual halakha is...
The actual halakha is like Rebbe Meir. Right? Okay, Poseidon. So that's the end. We got up to the.
We said in the Mishnah. We said that Chachamim, Ein Chachamim Modim.
Ein Chachamim Modim. No, right.
But you're saying that Halacha is not.
So in this case, I think we do paskin like Rabbi Meir that when he's told Lebedavar.
Either case, either we say that Halacha is like Rabbi Meir in either explanation of Rabbi Meir, either according to Rabbi.
Right, so we still don't know. Is it because it's like this or is it because it's like that? Oh, so halakha lamaisa, we have to figure it out.
I think in other words, no. So it has to be like the Gemara does actually. When I said the thing of the kasha, that's important to leave it as a kasha, because if it's not a kasha, then you might view Rabbi Yochanan as being a legitimate interpretation, in which case you have a problem. But if the Gemara says kasha and Rabbi Yochanan, therefore we can't accept Rabbi Yochanan, then the only other explanation is Rav Huna. And if it's Rav Huna, then we have halacha that we learned that we can't if it's a Tanai,
you're right, correct. Okay, we have to resolve this for next week.